All right, Building 26 again with the reliability and performance and telemetry people. Who are you?
I'm David Grant, and I'm one of the developers and analysts for Bang Analyze and for the Windows Error Reporting Data.
Excellent.
And my name is Ryan Kivett, and same thing.
Excellent. So let's just jump right into this. What is Bang Analyze?
So Bang Analyze is a debugger extension that ships as part of the debugging tools for Windows, and its primary job is to do triage across cap files, dump files, crashes, hangs, blue screens, etc.
Okay. So. Excellent. And so you actually implemented this, or you analyzed the results of its work?
Well, we do both, right? So we're watching the data as it comes in and making changes constantly to Bang Analyze to better triage information, so to get the crash data and the hang data to the right developer, right? So the data all comes in roughly from user-submitted crashes and hangs, and it gets dumped into a really big database, and then it has to be sliced and diced out to who is the next person that can actually act on that data.
Sure.
And that's Bang Analyze's primary job.
Okay, so then what about the notion of root cause analysis? I mean, you're going to need source code at some level to figure out the root cause of a code problem.
Yep.
How does that work?
Fundamentally, the goal is to really find something to follow up on. So generally, the output is a module and function to blame, which could be associated with a source line if you have the symbolic information. And then there's a little bit of sort of further information we call problem class, and it's a little bit of a classification about what it sees. Mm. But the main goal is really find a symbol that it can associate with an owner.
Okay.
Whether that's an email alias or just attributed to heap corruption or something like that.
Interesting. And if it's heap corruption, we know who you're sending that to, right?
Well, that comes right back at us.
Yeah, heap corruption's, it's one of the interesting sort of catch-all buckets where we purposely put them all into the same bucket, and then we actually harvest that in other ways. So we'll, for example, if we see heap corruption calves, we'll go enable on the Watson backend, we'll say, hey, for users that submit this, please enable an auto-verifier, a page heap light, basically. Mm-hmm. So the next time they crash, potentially in this problem, we'll actually get good debuggable information. Because generally speaking, heap corruption, just in a vanilla app, is not always diagnosable.
Right? Absolutely.
So,
good point. So let's dig a little bit into sort of how it works. Like, high-level algorithm, take us through kind of the steps of what it does without getting into this.
So roughly what it does is it takes a target, the dump file or a live process, and it looks at how many threads are in the process. And then for each thread, it looks at the frames that make up the threads. And then it does some other searching for data that is related to both, right? So what's the process name or the command line? Some metadata about the application that we're doing it. And this is all done so that we can eventually drive analysis and apply rules that allow us to figure out who to go follow up with. Mm-hmm. So we get the broad set of data, we get the thread data, and then we basically go through each frame and we say, do we know anything specific about this frame? And so for the named frames, named module function pairs, we can go in and we can say, okay, well, this local variable is interesting or this parameter is interesting, and then we can take it apart and follow down through chains like that. So obviously a lot of this stuff is very dependent on symbols, so it works mostly with Microsoft code, but the raw underpinnings work with anything, anything that has symbols. So
sure.
We can take anything apart, and then once we have that set of data, which we refer to as attributes, we can then run a set of classifiers on them. And the classifiers are the rules, right? If you have these attributes together, then go talk to this guy. Or if you have these attributes together, or this, go talk to them. There are other attributes that basically trigger other attributes, right? So if you have these things, well, then go look over here for this extra stuff and go from there.
So, okay.
So there's multiple passes to collect attributes and generate basically things we know about the report. And then there's one or two passes and classifiers, generating the problem class I talked about. And the classifiers also help us pinpoint which frame or which symbol we're going to actually blame and sort of target for follow-up.
Okay, so if I follow up and you just, I mean, it's kind of, I'm just thinking about a lot of the errors that you guys get through the telemetry system in general. If you could look at Windows 7 as an example, most recent example. I mean, they may not be easy to reproduce. right?
Right.
Because you have to then regress. So this function might have done something weird, but it might have been weird because of the data that was passed to it was screwy or pointing to memory that didn't exist in a local machine. Not going to be easy to reproduce, but you can figure all that stuff out. I mean, that's what you guys do.
Oftentimes, yeah. I mean, debugging is kind of...
It's an art form.
Almost more of an art than a science in a lot of ways. Yeah. In fact, when we autofile the bugs that we get from the analysis results, we actually put in there explicitly, there are no repro steps for this. This is from Watson.
Right on.
So I think developers are used to seeing these kinds of bugs now, mm-hmm. and that's taken some time for everybody to get used to. But and they understand that for certain issues, there's ways to get even more data about a specific one. So there's a lot of data collection capabilities that Bang Analyze takes use of mm-hmm. that you can actually trigger on the Watson backend. So developers, you know, analyzing a certain thing, and they say, well, I'd really like to know this. This would help me figure out this problem. A lot of times we can go and collect more data for that specific issue. We couldn't do it always because it would be very expensive and send up a tremendously sized CABs and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, obviously the most interesting errors are going to be the ones that happen a lot. Right. Not maybe they, I shouldn't say that.
No.
The most obvious ones that you can sort of automate some sort of analysis around are going to be ones where you've gotten a lot of data about. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So we get a lot of data from IE, for example. Right. So there's a lot of specialized analysis that goes into taking apart different things in IE and trying to classify, okay, well, this failure was in IE. Was it a failure because of this BHO or toolbar or ActiveX control? Did we have a problem with rendering? Mm-hmm. Are there, you know, do we have general extension problems? Was there some JavaScript issue that, you know, happened a long time ago that we have to go take things apart and look at it that way? Mm-hmm. Are there other things in there that might actually do that? But yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The places where we get the most data are where we have done the most analysis. So that's, you know, Ryan mentioned heap corruption, right? We get a lot of heap corruption data, so we have a lot of analytics that go into trying to classify what type of corruption it is, right? Is it a double free? Obviously, it's the easiest case. Mm-hmm. Is it a use after free? Are we freeing an address on the stack? Are we freeing an address that's not in a heap at all? Are we freeing an address in a module? Because these are all the most common types of corrupting patterns that we see, right? Mm-hmm. And those all are very specific. We have plenty of non-specific ones where, you know, we don't know. All of the data that would support why this block is no good at this time is mm-hmm. gone, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to just basically tank the analysis to heap corruption, and have somebody go, you know, that's somebody's job for a day or a week or whatever, mm-hmm. is just to take that apart and look at stuff.
And then for the really hard ones, you send a note to Adrian Marinescu, huh? Like, hey, man, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Or Silvio.
Yep.
And we've talked to these guys on Channel 9 during this sort of going around, figuring out sort of what's going on under the hood. Because in Windows 7, you guys have done amazing work in reliability, performance, stability, and that's all Michael Fortin's kind of engineering team. So another question I would have is, over the years, so this is a 5 or 6 year old technology, right? 5 years? 4 years?
A little more than that, but yeah.
Okay.
So
let's talk a little bit about how the technology itself has evolved. Right? I mean, clearly it's machine learning. It's getting better. You guys are making it faster, more performant, more reliable.
Yeah. All of those things are true. I mean, the original Bang Analyze basically just was a stack walker, right? It would take apart the stack and say, okay, well, this guy is the top of the stack. He's frame zero. He's to blame, right? Mm-hmm. And that was it, right? There's a lot of problems with that. That's, you know, that basically makes the heap responsible for everything related to heap corruption, right? It doesn't do anything further than that. So then the first iteration of changes from that is having an ignore list, right? We don't want to blame malloc. We don't want to blame new. We don't want to blame free. We want to blame the callers of those things. So that's the next iteration there. Then some of the other things we talked about, going in and pulling out attributes from different frames and things like that, and then really the clustering of those attributes and being able to write rich rules that say collect all of these attributes and choose this guy to blame, who may not even be on the stack, there may only be a reference to him somewhere else. That's the next set of things, the next iteration.
I
would say it's been pretty organic in also dependent on kind of the technology we're targeting. So over time, the work client has improved as far as what data it can send. And so when we get new kinds of data coming into the cab that's, you know, packaged up, Bang Analyze changes to sort of consume that data.
Okay.
So you know, I think in the beginning it probably couldn't have cracked Wickl files and all the other files beyond dumps that go in the cab, and now it pretty much cracks all those. It consumes multiple dumps in the cab file, whereas before it didn't. And then as the products change, as you know, teams implement new things, we'll go back to IE as an example. They've done in IE7 they went to multiple threads for their tabs, and now in IE8 it's multiple processes. So all of the architectural stuff there to get good analysis, Bang Analyze has to adapt and change and be able to kind of recognize new classes in the product itself. Mm-hmm. You know, look for a certain, if you see this class or function or whatever, I know to ignore this and stuff like that. So in a sense, those triage rules change as well as far as what to ignore and what's actually important.
Absolutely.
As the products change. So, you know, in Windows, we tend to focus on, you know, the shell gets a lot of attention, IE a lot of attention, and then it goes back. That's because those are high-volume things that we see, mm-hmm. not because they're bad offenders, it's just because that's code that runs a lot on Windows. You know, IE is a very commonly run browser, clearly, and Explorer is pretty much always running. Mm-hmm. So
Raymond Chen's code, man. You know, that's a guy who pound down
that never,
against
that never fails.
Really? All right, right on. Of course it does. It's native code, man.
That's right.
I think only Nathan Wayne gets that.
Everything crashes.
Yeah. Everything crashes.
Yeah. Everything crashes.
So
in terms of the broader kind of fabric of what you guys do, which is telemetry, mm-hmm. operating system telemetry, how much of the, so you get pound. Well,
bang.
It's bang. Come
bang,
on.
Yep.
Bang Analyze. Gets a chunk of data, cab file, basically contains a bunch of gook, right?
Yep.
Stack allocation crap, function pointers, all that nice.
We like to call
stuff.
It sorting garbage.
Sorting garbage, exactly.
Yep. Or cleaning a mud puddle, as one of the other guys says.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So how much of the process after you've banged analyzed is animated, right? I mean, you guys aren't sitting here going through data. That's what Bang Analyze is helping you get to where it could be, but there's still more automation, more static analysis that needs to be done, right?
Oh, yeah. There's
so you pass this on to something else, to something else, to something else.
Yep. So the data comes in from individual client machines into one automated system, and that automated system collects all of the buckets and the hits and the cabs and stores it and makes it and exposes it to the other consumers,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there's one processing that goes across and takes apart the cabs just to figure out some minor metadata about what that cab is.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another set of process that really runs Bang Analyze and basically sucks all of the data out, or a large set of data that Bang Analyze exposes, and sticks it into a database. And then we get, that's the point where debugging leaves the debugger and goes into SQL, right? So then we're in SQL and we're making correlations in SQL and trying to decide, should we trigger this tool to run, should we trigger that tool to run? Ryan alluded to that with some secondary data collection stuff. And then you also have the same thing with bug filing, right? So we basically say, okay, well, we've got enough instances of this, we should go file a bug. And when we file a bug, then a whole bunch of other automation kicks off to say, okay, well, file this bug into this database and gather all of this data and, you know, slice, dice, and julienne it and
mm-hmm.
put it into the database and assign it to the right developer. Right?
Excellent.
So, and then it comes right back around, because then the developer will be looking at the bug and they'll be like, oh, boy, I really could figure this out if I just had this one more piece of data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's the sort of thing that we use to again, fill in the databases and say, okay, we'll get this.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we can then have the conversations with the developers to say, well, you know, there's some WHERE APIs that you can use to make sure that data is always there all the time, right? So then the data can be there the first time around. We don't have to wait on it a second time, and Bang Analyze can take advantage of it and slice and dice and give you better bugs. Because that's really one of the big jobs here, is to give developers the best bugs they can so that they can fix the best bugs out there.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, good job. I mean, that seems to be the case in this release and in the other release. Come on.
Yeah.
And then SP2. And then, I mean, so I did have another question. I mean, I probably have a few more, so I can't remember exactly what happened to it, but it was a good one. So in terms of, like, you know, when I think about the telemetry system on an operating system, it's kind of like has a front end and a back end, right? So Watson, how much is actually going on in the front end to massage things, to make things a little bit more easy for the things in the back end to actually deal with? So Watson's getting smarter and better. So I was just kind of thinking, I mean, you could have sort of an automated pound, Bang Analyze. We got to rename that, man.
Yeah.
Bang Analyze inside of the client, right? Like,
Yep.
We've definitely, that's definitely been talked about over mm-hmm. the years. One of the challenges goes back to the symbols issue we mentioned earlier.
Sure.
So, now there's, today you technically could run Bang Analyze and point all the clients at the public symbol server, and you probably would get decent analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be different than what we have internally, because internally we have the private symbols, which gives us a lot of type information. There's various rules that generate various attributes that are maybe pretty low level attributes, but they affect the outcome and the problem class you eventually reach. And so you could get dramatically different end results.
Okay,
that would classify everything differently. So, but it is totally possible, and we've kind of kicked around doing this. There's some people that they're in the camp of they really want to do that, and some people say that's never going to work, and they only want to go down there.
You're always going to have these camps.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems with trying to do a lot of analysis on the client is it's hard to rev the engine, right? You can see how often we rev antivirus engines, for example, or various vendors, right? I mean, this would be us revving another engine that has to be shipped to all the clients all the time on that same regular interval, right? And that interval is literally once a week, if not more often, during real rough development or busy development cycles.
Sure.
So, we could do that. It would just make, it would consume more client resources in terms of hard disk and performance and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, there's no need to do that. We can ship the data up and do all the work that we need to on the back end.
I don't want to get into the whole design of the Watson system, but we essentially send a bucket which is based off of sort of non-analytical data, just really basic process name, version, module name, version, stuff like that.
Okay.
I think there's opportunities to do some very basic analysis. And I guess we do some basic analysis for some of the bucketing, but we could probably do a little bit more. That's not quite full-on Bang Analyze, but something beyond what we do today, and get a much better bucket right off the bat without having to... a lot of work
to be done. Absolutely. Well, I mean, when you think about it, not to rat hole on this, but that's a term that we use here at Microsoft, people out there, especially PMs who go to meetings a lot, they'll use that term a lot. And I guess it means something, like focusing on something that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But this is actually interesting because with sort of the technical releases and the beta releases and kind of things like that, it would be great to have a version of the OS with all of this capability in it. I mean, I'm using a beta version and I've decided to join this party. Could probably speed up or increase the value and decrease the amount of work you guys do on the back end, but that's neither here nor there. It's still the same technology.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool stuff, man. So I have to ask this. I mean, how do you get into this area? I mean, we go around and talk to all these people around the company and Windows specifically. How did you guys land in this world?
I like taking stuff apart, right? So that's what it is, right? I spend my day taking stuff apart, right? And, trying to write the code that takes apart the code that wrote the code.
Nice.
To find the bugs, right? So that's, I guess, my background is I was in Windows, supported IIS, did a lot of debugging, did a lot of back-end IIS and COM debugging, and then came over here, which is, instead of being very... very focused on one set of technologies, IIS and COM. This now gets me touching all of the Windows technologies, lots of third-party stuff, lots of outreach potential. And for me, it's about helping customers. So I get to help customers. It's very abstract. I'm not talking to customers every day, but I mean, I get to help them, and they get to enjoy the benefits of the work I do, and that's important to me.
Absolutely.
Similar thing, I think. So having the tinkering mindset is really important. And we often just call it really creative troubleshooting. Kind of goes back to the thing where you said there's no repro steps, but still wanting to figure out how this happened and, what are what are the missing pieces that you need to actually, solve that problem. And sort of that knowing what to look for and wanting to look for it, I think is really important. But my background is actually very similar to David's. We both actually came from the same support team a long while back called SIE, and that was sort of the SWAT debugging team that would go out and go into server rooms in the middle of the night and fix stuff.
Cool.
So actually, a number of people around here are from those same support areas. So
Cool, man. Well, you're still, I mean, you're still supporting, now you're supporting the actual operating system and the people who use it. Because in the end, stuff just needs to work, man. Now, so customers now are happy when it does.
Now it's leverage, because now we can support a lot more people at one time than just individual. So
one other question. I'm a big fan of the kernel. It's probably my favorite part of the operating system, even though you actually don't ever explicitly deal with it as a user. Does this work for kernel crashes and stuff like that? Is there any subtle differences? I mean, is it harder for you to find the kernel errors or easier?
Inside, Bang Analyze started doing kernel analysis, and then user kind of came a little bit later. But fundamentally, conceptually, a lot of the things are the same. But it's kind of an interesting topic in Bang Analyze. In the source code itself, the things actually happen in very different areas. And it's actually a topic of improvement we've discussed about how to bring those together, because a lot of times you have both, you have kernel, you're in a kernel target, but you're looking at user mode code. And Bang Analyze is not as good in those situations as it was doing, you know, direct user mode and user mode dump, for example, or in a kernel mode dump. But yeah, it does both and pretty much produces very similar output as far as something to blame, someone to follow up with.
Cool. How many of these things do you actually send to Landy Wang? Does he ever get any for memory manager faults?
Well, I think he's eliminated all the bugs in the memory manager.
You know what? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, that it's interesting, and that must be fun to get to.
There still is an internal alias that random stuff goes across, and I'm sure some of those get pushed to him. Yeah.
The kernel stuff does the same thing. They pull together all the unknown pool corruptions, just like we pull together the unknown heap corruptions, and then that just becomes a cesspool to go wade through and try and find the interesting issues. So,
and one of the things that you guys try to do, which is incredibly hard, is to understand intention, right? And that's hard enough to do by looking at programming code, even if you're a compiler. So let's talk just briefly about how complicated it is to kind of try to figure out what it was that really led to the gobbledygook that you're trying to figure out, right? That's a really super hard problem, especially in a system as complicated as a general purpose operating system like Windows that supports, you know, most applications that run on Windows aren't our code, man.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. We have, you know, there are lots of different functions, to say the least, and that, you know, trying to understand why this guy called that guy, or at what point this person called this one, and why the data is in the state that it's in, and how it got there. I mean, that's, you just keep walking backwards, just keep doing concentric circles backwards. You start for a given target, you just work out to try and understand where things are, and, you know, eventually you'll come to the end, and we hope that the end is where you can actually go into the source code and change something, but sometimes the end is, well, I need to go get more data, or the end is, well, we're just not getting the right data, we're just not in the right place anymore here, or we're just, you know, we have lots of corruption here that we just can't go any further through, so we have to step back and say, okay, well, do we have any instances of this problem maybe a minute ago, or maybe some other time ago, and things like that, and so... Mm-hmm. So we just work through things like that and just, you know, read lots of code. I mean, that's the other part of the debugging stuff that we do. Yeah, we spend a lot of time in the debugger, but we spend a lot of time in all kinds of different code editors, reading different code, backtracking through code, trying to understand, you know, why a developer wrote something in the way he did, you know, looking at different, I don't know, I end up looking at source code formatting stuff a lot to try and see if that is indicating any types of problems or logic problems or things like that. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff like that. You know, function sizes, lengths, you know, number of parameters, all of those things contribute to code quality or the lack thereof, right?
Interesting. So now to all of this, I mean, there is a lot of assembly, it's an assembler in Windows. I mean, a lot, some. I mean, you have some of those developers around here. I can't find them because they tend to hide. They only come out at night, so I haven't been able to really locate one. What does that kind of look like when you, I mean, you're going to have to look at some of that. So, I mean, do you have to get down that low sometimes to kind of figure out what's going
absolutely.
On?
Absolutely.
Certainly for some.
There's
some
the Intel architecture manual right there.
Right? All the blue and the green.
Ready to read. I mean, you need them sometimes. I don't remember the entire instruction set. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So you got to take them apart and figure it out. Hey, you know.
Yeah, it could be fun games over beer, right?
That's right.
Really, really cool, you guys. This is exceptional work. It's good to meet people who actually are really helping make Windows reliable. And we're going to come by and talk to some other people. I mean, you guys have been celebrated internally in the company. So congratulations to the great work of your tool. I think it's really cool.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And other teams across the company, do they probably also will use this tool to understand their own problems, obviously.
Yep. And outside the company, we have a pretty extensive website ISVs come and sign up for, and they generally look at the results that Bang Allies produces, but they also use Bang Allies and run it on their own cabs and use it to figure out what the problems are. So.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, we have RTM Win7 at this point, but the Visual Studio folks are there right at the end of their beta milestone, and we're working with them a lot, constantly getting Bang Analyze tuned and understanding CLR4.0 failures and being able to give them the best bugs they got. And the same thing with Office, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're helping those guys all the time, right? And we work with the live guys. Every team in Microsoft we work with pretty much to help them get things, you know, get the right bugs, right?
Absolutely. And one last question, because we can't ever end when you think we're going to. and that is essentially, you guys are going to have to probably do some work in the composition of this tool to meet the needs of, you know, ManyCore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking along those lines? Are you starting to think about re-architecting? Not re-architecting, but I mean, wouldn't it be nice if Bang Analyze could target 100 cores or 1,000 cores and do a massive parallel processing, speed up computation, or do things concurrently?
Yep.
Those kind of things you think about too as well.
Absolutely.
We talk about re-architecting almost every day.
Excellent. So,
but yeah, I mean, being able to do like apply some really large clustering algorithms and expose the data, definitely something we want to do. There's a lot of things that we need to do in the time frame, but that's, we talk about re-architecting every day, and that's one of the first things on our list is basically split up analysis so that we can really do all of that stuff in the database. So all of that classification stuff, yeah, on the database, in the cloud, wherever, right? Distribute the processing across everyone so that everybody can basically contribute to giving better bugs.
Dryad, man.
Yeah.
Have you seen Dryad?
Yes. Yeah.
Very cool. And they actually have native APIs. You get down to screw around with the Vertex topography.
Yep.
Right on, man.
Yeah, today, Bang Analyze kind of runs in isolation. It doesn't have the benefit of what other runs of Bang Analyze have produced, right? It doesn't get to look at all the other results. So what David just said is maybe Bang Analyze becomes simply the data extractor, and the knowledge is really just applied in a BI fashion across the data.
Excellent.
And then you do some clustering algorithms and stuff like that to actually get what are the failures we want to go look at.
Cool.
So.
And we do this today on small data sets, but really we want to do it with large stuff. I mean, not just the clustering algorithm stuff, but I think we have a lot of ideas and a lot of things that we've done internally on small data sets in the realm of data visualization that, the sky's the limit there. We could really make some really pretty bugs for people to go fix. So.
Well, sure. I mean, developers would love to sort of like deep zoom into this hardcore, cluster F of function pointers, right?
Yep.
Right on, you guys. Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Great work. Take a vacation, man. Summer. You guys just busted your... I mean, now you're working on... Do you ever get to take time off, man, or what?
Sure.
All right.
Once in a while.
You just shift Windows. That's pretty insane.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers.